Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to go in order today, 769 and Senate Bill 146. So let's get going with the hearing on Senate Bill 769, and Jamie will provide us with a briefing.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. In 2015, the legislature established a permissive policy in which counties and cities, if applicable, may enter into an agreement where the owners of a solar project are responsible for payment in lieu of taxes rated to the amount of $7,000 per megawatt. And then it also prescribed the manner in which the owner would be notified, how the monies would be collected and distributed to the taxing districts, and also failure to pay penalties, etc. And so this bill just regarding the payment in lieu of taxes for a solar project property sets the deadline for late filers. Previously, there was a description of a late filer, but this now sets a deadline. And then it also states that the payment in lieu of taxes are going to appear on the next property tax statement, and that the fees will be distributed to the taxing districts in the same manner as the property taxes are distributed.
Okay, Senator Taylor is sponsoring this bill. Senator Taylor, maybe you could give us your reason for introducing it, what the problem is it's trying to fix.
Well, thank you, Chair Hatt. So I was asked to introduce this bill, which I was happy to do. I agreed to do this on the courtesy from the Oregon State County Assessors. And as you can see, they're here today. And on OLAS, I understand that the technical administrative fix in relation to the payment in lieu of taxes pilot program for properties contain your solar project. Eric Kanzler and LRO already spoke, and DOR are also, he just came in, are here. They can go into more detail, but I did go ahead and do this as a courtesy for the Oregon State County Assessors. So.
All right, let's bring up Eric and Tom.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Eric Kanzler, representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. I'm here with Tom Rolfing, Marion County Assessor, and also co-chair of OSAKA's Legislative Committee. I will let Tom do the description of the policy change, or frankly, the administrative change in the bill. I'll let you know that it is related to the administration of payments in lieu of taxes for utility scale solar projects. We see it as a purely administrative change in processing the payments through the property tax system rather than a separate system that was originally set up to implement the pilots that frankly doesn't make as much sense. This is something that I've vetted with the Department of Revenue, with the Association of Oregon Counties, and then with Renewable Northwest, that also vetted it with a bunch of different developers and other interests that they're associated with thus far. We have the language we want. Nobody has indicated a problem with the bill. They do see it as an administrative fix. So thus far, I think we're in the clear. I haven't heard from anybody with an issue. And so I will leave it at that, and I'll let Tom tell you a little bit more about what this actually does and why we care.
Thank you. Chair Haas, members of the committee, I'm Tom Rolfing, the Marion County Assessor, here representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors as co-chair of our legislative committee. I'll be brief. I submitted written testimony. This bill, what it is intending to do is, instead of the complicated and new system of collecting a payment in lieu of tax, which is the only payment in lieu of tax I believe we have in the state, the only one I know that I've worked with, and we don't have it in Marion County, but the payment in lieu of tax took a process. We have regular property tax collections that works really well, and it created a system aside, right? It created an exemption, and then this payment in lieu of tax that involves other departments like the treasurer and there's not the typical reporting that there is with the regular property tax system. the bill, what it would do is add a, like a fee, just like the Department of Forestry has when they report their fire patrol costs to us. We put that on the tax statement as a fee. It gets reported, collected. The transparency is there for the Department of Revenue, our reports to you, the legislature, under the summary of assessments and levies. It's a simplification for us, a real efficiency improvement.
Just a fee.
It would be an annual fee certified to us from the Department of Revenue based on the power generation of the facility.
And remind me, what would this cut out then? What would this eliminate, the bureaucracy that this would no longer be in?
It's we have a system in place to put a fee on the property tax statements and the collections of that. We would have the tracking and the reporting that already goes with that, and it would I don't have a PILT, so we didn't actually have to figure out all the details in Marion County, but you would otherwise, with under the current system, have to have a separate process for billing, and there's not a reporting process currently under the PILT, so you wouldn't see it in reports to you as to what types of exemptions and programs are happening with the property tax system. And then the distribution, we would have to make up a distribution to the districts, and there's a process in the PILT to do that, but it's not transparent.
It's a little bit of a mystery to us, frankly, why the property tax administration wasn't included from the start. I mean, we could go back and look at the legislative intent and record, but it would have been much cleaner had this in 2015 when the pilot program was established to just administer it through the property tax program instead of setting up this sort of one-off program that the bill described that would be a little bit different in every county, and as Tom says, would not necessarily roll the information into the reporting that comes along with including it in the property tax administration and then on up to DOR and so forth.
Can you give us an idea of how many taxpayers are in this category?
Sure. There are, and I spoke with the department this morning to get a sense, I believe that there are 20 individual solar arrays that currently have payment in lieu of taxes instead of the standard ad valorem property tax assessment. I don't know how much valuation, Mark may have that information handy, but it's only 20 projects throughout the state. And they tend to be clustered in certain counties and not others.
Okay, Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, of course, I'm familiar with the bill since it was my bill in 2015. It was brought by Obsidian Resources. I think they did all the work on it. Because this is one of those deals where you try to get something going, they did, and then people justifiably step up and go, wait, you've done it wrong, and now we're getting it right. It was intended to address the issue of central assessment, which if you try to go through that process with a solar array, adds enormous amounts of cost and uncertainty. This levels the amount that the facility pays over its lifetime. Is a negotiated thing entirely up to the county, whether the county wants it or not. We knew that when we did this, if the county didn't like it, they wouldn't do it, and it's working. Yep. And so I think this fix is welcome. I'm judging from the fact that Dave Brown is not here. He must think it's okay. That'd be my guess.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benz, he is on vacation at present. Wow. So, as previously stated, this has been vetted with a number of utility scale developers, and they see it as we see it, as a simple cleanup and administrative fix to help ensure that the pilot, which was indeed, of course, intended to provide clarity and certainty, and has to be approved by both parties. It helps it to be clean.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Yes, the bill, you know, the reason I brought the bill back then was in keeping with my now beginning 12th year effort to promote solar in the vast spaces that we enjoy near transmission lines in Far Eastern and Central Oregon. And so I'm very happy for this bill. I'm very happy you brought it. And I'm hopeful that it will assist in promoting additional solar build out in a small, incredibly small part of the vast space I represent.
So this is your doing in 2015 that we...
That is correct, that you're now fixing. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, this is, it's really a cleanup. I don't think it'll have any vast implications, frankly, but it'll help ensure that it continues to work well and smoothly.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Councilman Mark Garst.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the Department of Revenue. One of the things that we do at the department is we sometimes bring issues to your attention, and we certainly don't have any issues with the bill as it's drafted. We think that you could pass this through just fine. It would definitely make administration more simple, and so we really don't have any concerns. We have a bit of an issue that we just want to bring to your attention, and we brought this in testimony when changes to the program have been considered, but we have a concern with the way that the clawback language in the program is structured. So the way that the clawback works, it's laid out in statute, and it's in a note following 307-175, and it basically says that if someone fails to pay their fee in lieu of tax, that they'll be disqualified from the exemption, and they'll be disqualified from the payment in lieu of tax. And then there's a, they'll be taxed as if they regularly would have been, so that would be central assessment, and there is a one-year clawback. So they would pay as a penalty 1 year of the fee as a penalty, and then they would get to be taxed as if they had never been in the program at all. And so our concern is that this kind of opens the door to a bad actor. And so what you could see happen is that someone could sign up for one of these agreements early on, and Senator Bentz laid it out quite well. The way that this was sold is that we want to have a level payment over the life of the project. But they could enter into the program early on when the value of the project is high and their property taxes would be high. They could participate, pay the fee in lieu of tax. They could wait until the depreciated value of the property was such that they would pay less under the regular property tax system, and then they could simply drop out of the agreement, pay 1 year of the fee as a penalty, and then for the rest of the life of the project, they would be on in the regular property tax system, paying less than what the fee in lieu of tax would be. We're not aware of this happening, but it is an issue that we've brought up every time, you know, this bill has been heard. We thought that maybe there was going to be a policy bill, a little bit more policy substantive bill this session, and we were working with the sponsors of that bill to get some changes. What we had discussed possibly putting in would be that that the agreement would specify what happens if the company drops out of the fee in lieu of tax. So that would, you know, save the legislature from having to make a decision that you would claw back all of the tax savings over the life of the project, or 5 years of tax savings, or whatever it is, that other options that might be out there. But you could just say that the agreement has to specify what happens if somebody drops out of the agreement. And that's basically what I have for you today. Just want to bring it to your attention. I don't know if you're interested in doing an amendment in this bill. I certainly would not want to jeopardize what the assessors are trying to do. I think that for them, the issue that we have two systems set up right now, one to administer this fee in lieu of tax program, and another, which is the property tax system that they use every day, if they can just move this onto the tax statement, that's a great administrative efficiency. And so we're very, I think that we certainly don't have any concerns about that. So if making a change were to be disagreeable with the industry, then, you know, I think that we would prefer just to see this administrative fix. But while you have the bill here, while you have the relating clause, I just wanted to bring it to your attention.
Okay. So, Mr. Benz?
Sure, thank you. Well, it strikes me that it was too bad that David Brown is on vacation, because he would be able to suggest to us what the original negotiation, why the original negotiations led to that particular design. So when's he getting back? That's the question.
Should we call?
Yeah, we probably should.
Well, keep that possibility open. We're not set up for a work session today, so.
Thank you.
We'll think on it. One of the original sponsors of the original bill, think on it.
All right,
No one else has signed up to testify on this bill, so I'm going to close the public hearing. And I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 146. Jamie.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to give a tiny bit of background on this bill. So it seems that in 2015, a bill was passed, and prior to that bill, the situation could occur that a tax-exempt entity like a city government could purchase a piece of property that was in deferral status. So, for instance, some forest land or some farmland, and upon the purchase or after the purchase, the tax-exempt entity might realize that there were taxes that were owed on the property, and they had not been paid prior to the closing of the sale. At that point, the local governments don't have any teeth from which to recover those amounts because the entity that purchased that property was a tax-exempt entity. So enter 2015, and the law that was passed stated that prior to that transaction, that the county assessor must certify that the property taxes on that tax-deferred property were paid, and there is a list in statute of tax-exempt entities that would not be required to pay those taxes if they were to purchase property that was tax deferred. And so no additional taxes may be imposed upon them. And so that includes government agencies and Fish and Wildlife Commission and State Parks and Recreation Department. And the bill that's before you today essentially would like to add soil and water and conservation districts to that list. So if a soil and water conservation district purchased property that was in tax deferral status, that no additional PAT taxes would be imposed upon them. And it is my understanding, and there's still some work that's going on behind the scenes in terms of getting information from council and the assessors, that it is often the situation that there is an intermediary, and that is that there can be a nonprofit land trust that will maybe purchase the property, and it may continue to operate as a tax-deferred farm, for instance, during the period that they hold that property, and then they are the intermediary, which then sells that on to the Soil and Water Conservation District. And so that component of the transaction is also considered in this bill as well.
Who's on that list so far? You read them off, and I don't see it on the list.
So we have the State Parks and Recreation Commission Acquisitions, State Parks Recreation Department for public park purposes, State Fish and Wildlife Commission, forest land acquired by federal, state, or local government agency. And so these are listed A through F in current statute, and the G would be adding soil, water, and conservation district to that.
Oh, there we are. Okay. Thank you. Okay, Anna Freitas.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Anna Freitas, and I am here testifying on behalf of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts in support of Senate Bill 146. The Oregon Association of Conservation Districts serves and represents Oregon's 45 soil and water conservation districts, which are special districts governed by elected boards. We have districts in every county across the state. The districts protect and enhance soil quality, water quality and quantity, and habitat by supporting voluntary conservation in partnership with private landowners and managers, as well as federal, state, and nonprofit partners like land trusts. Senate Bill 146 would reduce financial barriers that penalize agricultural and forest landowners who seek to conserve the public benefits of their land. Oregon's tax deferrals for forestry and agriculture codify our dedication to economic and public goods that those land uses provide. And Senate Bill 146 would reduce the barrier to continuing those benefits through soil and water conservation districts or in transferring land between a land trust and a tax-exempt public entity. Certain land trust to public entity property transfers may fall under the exemptions to the requirement to pay back taxes, but not those relative to soil and water conservation districts. Senate Bill 146 corrects this oversight by providing that additional taxes may not be imposed upon disqualification of land from special assessment if land has been acquired by a soil and water conservation district. I would like to note that we work closely with the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts, or COLT. COLT's executive director, Kelly Beamer, wishes she could be here today to express her support for this bill, but they have an all-day board meeting. On behalf of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts, I would like to reiterate and encourage the committee to pass Senate Bill 146.
Oh, hello.
Can you explain? I guess I need this boiled down a little bit. How you acquire land better and how it comes to you.
Yeah. There are a couple examples that exist where a soil and water conservation district has acquired land. In Yamhill County, Yamhill SWCD purchased a piece of land from, I believe, a forest landowner who was going to sell the land. They were retiring and wanted that land to be kept kind of in that natural benefit, the benefits for our habitat and soil and water quality, and also to use it for educational purposes. And so they went to Yamhill SWCD, whom they'd worked with on conservation management plans, and said, would you be interested in purchasing this property? So that's the kind of situation where this happens.
Those cases, now, if that family that owned that land owed back taxes, are you saying that you would buy that land and you would not feel an obligation to pay those taxes or not have them pay them? Or this is the part where I'm a little foggy.
Yeah. Under the way the current statute works, the landowner would be required to pay those back taxes. Mm-hmm. And that can be a disincentive to transferring that land to a tax-exempt entity, like a soil and water conservation district, or it can be a disincentive to transfer that land at all. It can really be a barrier to that kind of thing.
So this is relatively common? How would you characterize it? Where somebody is turning over land and they have a tax bill?
For soil and water conservation districts specifically, that is changing, I would say. They haven't historically been involved as much in land acquisition, but it is pretty common that landowners who own a piece of agricultural or forest land want to keep it in that kind of use, and they will owe back taxes if they want to transfer it to a public entity.
Okay. I'll follow. Senator Benz?
Senator Taylor.
Oh, thank you, Chair. The I was just curious. So, is there and are there any limits at all? I mean, back taxes. I mean, is it 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, or is it just walking away from all of it, kind of?
I'm not an expert on this.
No, yeah, no, it's okay. We can have. So I'm just curious.
I'm not entirely sure. Kind of the details.
That's fine.
I could get back to you with a more detailed answer. I do know that the landowner can owe up to 5 years of those deferred taxes, depending on the context.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Betts. Thank you, Chair. Question for the most knowledgeable one here. On the deferred taxes, yeah. Is it does that include the taxes for disqualification from EFU use? Because when I read it, that's what immediately what I thought. And we'd go back 10 years and pick up those back taxes.
So my thank you, Chair Senator Bentz. My understanding in talking with the county assessors, and I also know that Mark is here, is that when it is disqualified from or moved from EFU to maybe limited farm use, that may mean that part of the farm taxes stay in deferral, for instance. And it's not the sale of the property that would trigger those deferred taxes to come due or for the property to come out of deferral. So you could transfer the property to, say, another farmer, or that land trust could still continue to farm it. But normally you would have these 4 years where the property could fall out of deferral, and then the foreclosure processes could start. So that would be the sort of triggering event, is the change in status. But a lot of the times when I talk to the county assessor from Lane County, what will happen is it will be an EFU, and they will go out there and visit the farm, and there's absolutely no farming activities going on at these farms, and then at that point it comes out of deferral.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So I'm just going to walk through it as I understand it, and you perhaps Stormwater Conservation District can clarify the hypothetical. So farmer decides to enter into a covenant with land trust. Let's assume that 10% of, who knows what the proper value of the covenants are. Give us an example. I know of several that I've worked on in assisting in making these transfers, but I don't care to share them. Those are privileged. Perhaps you have some. I'm asking for the percentage. If you have a farm that's worth, let's say, $5 million, and you decide to give a covenant across the land to the land trust, how do you value it?
That's a good question, and I wish Kelly were here to answer it, Senator Bentz. I don't know as much about land trusts or covenants, because soil and water conservation districts don't typically use that kind of process. The examples that we have from soil and water conservation districts acquiring land, I forget the word for it, but they buy the property the way any landowner would. It's not, it doesn't have an easement or covenant on it. They are simply purchasing the land and choosing to use the land that is consistent with their purpose, which is conservation, particularly agricultural and forestry conservation, outreach and education relating to those things.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So my understanding is that the covenants would apply to the entire farm, imposing upon the farmer the obligation that he or she continue to farm in perpetuity, if you will, and that the elements, so that what you end up with is a split estate, and inside the estate that's acquired by the land trust is the covenant that imposes those restrictions on the use of the land. And then the question here is, does that change in use qualify for EFU? Because as I understand it, certain areas on the farm are called out and activities thereon are prohibited. For example, riparian areas may have to be fenced and preserved just for their riparian value as opposed to farming. And so the change then in that space, in that split estate, is away from farming and into some use, which I think is called out actually in the bill, the nature of the types of use that's referenced in a statute. That's at the back end of the bill. And if you look at that statute, it calls out with the purposes of the Soil and Water Conservation District. And so, but that's a long way of getting to the question of, does that trigger a loss of the EFU status and thus a recovery of the, I always thought it was 10 years you went back and picked up. And I wasn't talking about the farmer was short in paying their taxes for 4 years back and picked that up also. So there's the question, probably two of them.
Senator Benz, I believe EFU zoning would be a separate process. I'm not entirely sure. I do know that tax assessment on agricultural land to qualify for the agricultural tax deferral does include most soil and water conservation district practices because they are for agricultural related purposes. So that riparian zone does have benefits for environmental purposes, but they are related to the use of that land for agricultural purposes, because agricultural operations are required to some extent to meet certain water quality guidelines in the state, and soil and water conservation districts work with those landowners to voluntarily implement practices that work well with their operations to, you know, be stewards of the land as the landowner wishes to be.
The follow-up, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so the statute that's attached to the proposed bill references the fact that the Soil and Water Conservation District might end up holding those covenants or the portion of the estate originally acquired by the land trust. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. But the purposes of the Soil and Water Conservation Districts are not necessarily, I don't remember just farming being in there. I think there was a broader set of purposes. And so the issue is when transfer of ownership of that portion of the bundle of sticks that the land trust acquires first and then transfer to the Soil and Water Conservation District occurs, does that trigger such a change in the use that the EFU designation should be lost? That's, I think, the statement of the issue.
Senator Vance, that would depend on context.
True.
And soil and water conservation districts, as I mentioned, are governed by locally elected boards who would guide the use of that property in the interest of their community. So if the community wishes for that property to be kept in agricultural use, I believe the district would do so.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benz.
So I would just point out that we would now get into a definition of what farming truly is and the nature of it. And so what we had was a farmer operating and a farming operation, and now he or she has a partner. And so is the goal going to be to truly, quote, farm, end quote, or is it going to be to conserve the land for the greater public purpose reflected in the statute that guides soil and water conservation districts? And the answer to that is unclear to me because you'd have to look at the covenant and what the content. I think that's what you meant by context.
Senator Benz, yes, that is, I see your point, and it is possible that it would not be strictly agricultural use, but this bill is consistent with other exemptions in the back tax requirement. Other entities that do not have to that are not involved in that backtalk requirement are state parks and recreation departments, acquisition by the state for wildlife management, or forest land acquired by a government agency. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, right. So I would only say that I am not convinced that farming fits within the portion of the bundle of six acquired by the Soil and Water Conservation District. I think that's a stretch. And so this bill would, of course, then be necessary to make sure, I guess, that those back taxes were not triggered because you're falling out of that safety zone afforded by, quote, farming, end quote, which, as an aside, Mr. Chair, is why I oppose these kinds of trust arrangements, because I view it as a purchase by the state of vast swaths of my part of the state and moving it into the collective as opposed to the individual, which is irksome. But that is not the issue before us.
And out of property tax.
Well, there is that. I'm sorry, it is relevant, thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, appreciate it. And appreciate Senator Bentz's expertise.
I just have
on this
a question for
sorry,
staff.
Senator Tate.
Thank you, Chair. So it's, are these properties ever just abandoned and then there hasn't been any activity at all, and that's why they've accumulated up to numerous years of taxes? And then the person realizes, well, I just want to get rid of the piece of property? I mean,
so Senator Taylor, Chair Haas, I am looking into the question of the volume of properties in which this happens, these transactions that happen. I can say a couple things. One of the things that I can say is that the bill from 2015 resulted from a large portion of properties sitting in delinquency in Multnomah County to the tune of millions of dollars of back taxes. And in some other counties, hundreds of thousands of dollars of delinquent taxes that were uncollectible because they now sat in tax-exempt entities. And so the question in this situation and in regards to Senator Bentz's question is that prior to 2015, you might have a piece of property and it was in farm deferral, and then, for instance, the land trust could have bought it, and that still wouldn't have triggered a tax event if it stayed within the same farm use. And a Soil and Water Conservation District could have also bought that piece of property. And then what would have happened is at that point, if the use changed and the land came out of tax deferral, then the back taxes would have been owed but uncollectible. In the case of, and what happens now is it's not the change in use that triggers this tax event. It is the sale to a tax-exempt entity, which requires the assessor to issue essentially this certification that taxes have been paid before that's transferred. And in the case of speaking with Lane County, Mike Cowles informed me that this is a very common, I asked him how frequently he deals with these transfers of land from farmland to some sort of public entity, and he said it's almost daily. So I don't know the value. He said sometimes you'll have the Department of Transportation purchasing small portions of land for public easement or something like this. And I also know that one of the pieces of testimony that came in for this bill, they gave examples of the dollar values from the East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District, the dollar values that were for deferred taxes that were owed at the time of the transfer of property, just as an example. And I also know that if there's questions that I can't answer from in terms of dollar value, that maybe Department of Revenue might be able to answer some of those. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I just wanted to hear from the department.
Yeah, we're going to call up Mark Garst. Do you want to weigh in on this?
Chair Haas, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the Department of Revenue. What actually kind of piqued my interest was a little bit was Senator Bence's question. And I think Jamie just laid it out, though, that really what you're not seeing in the bill is the what the issue really is it's the statute 311-411. That's that 2015 law. And that applies to fee transfers of property as opposed to easements. And so if there's going to be a transfer of the whole bundle, the fee simple estate, to a tax-exempt entity, then they're not going to be specially assessed any longer. They're going to be exempt as a public entity. And so there's a disqualification, and it can be either a 5-year or a 10-year clawback, depending on whether it's EFU or non-EFU land, those types of things. But currently, the assessor is required to issue a certificate before the clerk can record that transfer, and the certificate has to say that the taxes are paid. What this bill will do is it'll say that those taxes cannot be imposed, so the assessor will be able to go ahead and issue that certificate that the taxes are not going to become due in the next property tax year. The transfer will be able to go through without that 5 or 10 years back taxes being paid. I don't think that back taxes in the sense that they haven't been paying are necessarily the issue. It's just that these folks are being specially assessed and they're no longer going to be specially assessed. And I work quite a bit with the folks from Colt on the concept, and they feel like it put them at a disadvantage as a buyer, because if it was going to sell from one farmer to another farmer, that second farmer would continue the activity that allows them to get the special assessment. Whereas here, if it's going to go from a farmer to a public entity, that's no longer the case. So they're going to be disqualified from special assessment, triggering the payback, and then they're going to come in and become exempted as public land. And Jamie laid it out. It was a cemetery in Multnomah County that caused this bill to be created in 2015. It was sold to a park district, and the Multnomah County assessor had millions of dollars of back taxes sitting on the roll for years and years, and it just really bothered him. And so he created this bill at that time to address that issue. So basically, you cannot transfer to a public entity unless the taxes are up to date. So that is, I think, where we're at.
Mark, the cemeteries don't have deferrals.
Right.
Farms do. Does that change the dynamic here?
Well, Senator Haas, they also had a clawback provision under their exemption that would require a clawback of the certain number of years of property taxes. And so it was that debt that sat on the roll. And you can't foreclose on a public entity. So the park district had no impetus to actually pay off the back taxes that were due. They couldn't be foreclosed upon. And so it just sits there on the roll, earning interest that will never be paid.
Senator Benz.
Thank you. So let's go back to my hypothetical. The land trust acquires a covenant across a $4 million farm, pays $2 million for it. What happens?
So Chair Haas, Senator Benz, I hadn't actually thought about that coming into this meeting, but what I'm seeing in the bill, and I think that you're well aware of the issue, sometimes these properties sell an easement or something like that across the property, and it comes out of what you would consider to be a farm use. I know that the assessor will sometimes disqualify a portion of the property in that situation, say, no, you're not farming it. Sometimes you can roll it into like a habitat special assessment. I mean, there are other programs that you might be able to switch it over to and then not have to pay the back taxes, my understanding. But there are other situations where I wanna say that they probably have clawed back some back taxes. And I think that, again, I don't think that that was the point of this, but I think that this would prevent those back taxes from being imposed on that portion of the property that's no longer being farmed. Best guess. I can get back to you. I'm sure my program people will be all over me if I've got that wrong, but that is what, reading it now with your question, I think that that is what would happen.
I'm going to follow up, Mr. Chair. Senator Benz. And looking forward, what happens? looking, forget about the back, let's look forward.
Chair Haas, Senator Vance, I think that they would just pay property taxes as anybody else would, no special assessment. So whatever the market value of the property is, times the rate in the area, I think is what would happen.
Senator Vance.
The question is, does the farmer who sold the easement to the land trust lose the special assessment on his remaining portion of the bundle of sticks?
Senator Haas, I do not think that that would be the case, but that is a good question, and I'll certainly follow up on that.
And follow up. So the question is then, if he or she does not lose that farm EFU exemption, then are they entitled to a reduction in their tax by virtue of the sale of a portion of the of what they used to own?
Senator Haas, Chair Benz, when we appraise a piece of property, we appraise all the interest in the property. So they would owe not just for, they would be billed not just for their ownership interest, but also for the ownership interest of the anybody who has an easement, I believe.
Follow up.
Mr. Benz.
So the ownership interest is though held by a public, by Soil and Water Conservation District under our hypothetical. It actually made its way from the land trust to the Soil and Water Conservation District. And so it's a split estate. I mean, some could call it an easement. It's more than that, because there's prohibitions contained in the covenant against subdivision of the property. There's prohibitions on the nature of use. There's all kinds of stuff that goes with what you normally see as an owner and retain control. So what are the tax consequences?
Excellent question. Really good question, yeah. Obviously. And certainly one for the lawyers, so I think.
Thank you, Senator Benz. Thank you, Mark. We have no one else signed up to testify on this bill. Any further questions before we adjourn for the day for Jamie to do homework on? Senator Benz, appreciate your expertise in this. Okay, that clears our docket for the day, and so we will adjourn.